to working with others and vision for you. And on Sunday night, we are on working with others. And it's very powerful when you look at it today, how AA is, and then you look at it, how it was then, and the principles still apply. And it's still one alcoholic working with another. There's a lot of great information in there. And this is our 10th year. We're going to celebrate our 10th anniversary. The last Saturday in September will mark 10 years that we've been doing the meeting. And then we started the Wednesday and the Sunday a few months after that. For those who are, some people listen on the podcast, which on the, we have a website, experiencethebigbook.org. If you're listening to podcasts, check the site out. We have some thoughts on recovery. I wrote two this week on the Serenity Prayer and the Spiritual Axiom, where it is in the Big Book. And it's two parts, and Stu said it was good, so you might get something out of it. It dawned on me that this one line in the Big Book, actually this paragraph covers the Serenity Prayer and the spiritual axiom that's in the 12 and 12. Tonight we started the Big Book over last week, and so we're going to be going through the Big Book on Wednesdays, and we're starting our 10th time through it. We looked at the cover. I brought the cover in from the original edition, and then we looked at the first page, which is blank, which tells us to leave behind everything we know when we come in here, that we need to let go of our old ideas. Anybody ever heard that? And so let go of everything you think you know, and be open-minded and see if this book can help you. That's what they expected when they gave this to the world. We're going to look at the history tonight. And then we got to the page Alcoholics Anonymous, the story. In the original book, it says of 100 men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And in Dallas, there's this big thing that people talk about. They're recovered alcoholics when they introduce yourself. I don't think it really matters. But a lot of people are hesitant to do that, but they called themselves recovered. And what that meant was that they had gotten to page 85 in the Big Book, and they were no longer under the power of alcohol. They could react to alcohol normally. And they didn't have the obsession having control of their lives anymore. Now, some people think recovered past tense, but it's a continuous process, so that's why some people don't like to say they're recovered and they're recovering. Doesn't matter. What they meant by recovered was that they were hopelessly in the throes of powerless over alcohol, and they had found a way that they didn't have to drink. And the people who did this, they were down and out. And we're going to read Bill's story, and they're going to describe more about alcoholism. People who had actually had no hope. They were at the end. The first people that came to AA, they used to go to the hospitals and find people that had been admitted numerous times, and they couldn't get to any solution. And they worked with a lot of people who of course, didn't want it and didn't do the deal. And then we looked at the table of contents, and we're going to read tonight about early AA, because we're going to read the foreword to the second edition. But the contents, if you notice the way the book's laid out, doctor's opinion tells you the problem. Bill's story is a story of hope, of somebody who had this hopeless condition of mind and body. What he did, what happened to him. There's a solution, describes how we have no control over how much alcohol we put in our bodies. Anybody have that? And we have this obsession of the mind. And then they tell us on page 24 that at certain times without defense against the first drink. Anybody have that in this room? And then the next page is there's a solution, and they describe that, and they tell us how Roland Hazard went to Dr. Young in Switzerland and how he came back. And eventually went to Ebbie Thatcher, worked with him and Bill W., and we're going to look at that tonight. And the more about alcoholism is to try to remind us that we have a queer mental twist. Anybody have that? Right before we drink, we can't say anything wrong with it. Anybody have that? Anybody swear off and then 20 minutes later drinking? How'd that happen? And we have no power to control that. And they tell us, they put this chapter in here, so we'll be ready to understand that without God, we are in big trouble. And then we agnostics is really where they start the God book. And they tell us we don't have any power to live, and we need a power to live, and they say we're going to talk about God. And then the rest of the book is our relationship with God. And God gives us a power so we don't have to drink, and gives us a power so we can live useful and whole lives. Anybody think that's a good idea?
Yes.
And so that's what they had. And then how it works, which we Mark read tonight, starts the steps. It has steps 3, 4, and 5. And into action is 3 and 4, excuse me. Into action has steps 6 through 11, and then working with others. So there's 102 pages, 104 pages, and that's all that's required to recover from a hopeless condition, mind, body. So if you take your book and go to page 103, anybody do that? And see if you can put your, hold it in two fingers. Just take the first page to 103 and see if you can lift your book up. Can anybody do that? It's pretty easy. Anybody lift your book up? Nobody's doing it? This is all it takes to recover. Now, when people come in here and we ask them to do the steps, they think we're asking them to climb Mount Everest. But that's all that's really required, is to follow through in the directions in those pages. And so we're going to look at the forward to the first edition. And this book was written in 1939, and we're going to read tonight how they came to put this book together. But when this appeared, there was no program of recovery that was known. There was no hope for us today. Now, I'm not saying AA has the only way, but this is the only program AA has. And anybody know what the title of the book is? It's called The Big Book, right? No, it's called Alcoholics Anonymous. And so this is Alcoholics Anonymous. We tend to forget that sometimes at the meetings. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12 steps is AA. That is AA, the program of recovery. So it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous, page XIII. I don't know why they did that. It gets to confuse me. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. So that's the first sentence people would read when they got this book. And it says, seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. So they're telling you on the first page that you may feel like you have a hopeless condition, mind and body, but it's not hopeless. It seems hopeless, but it's not. And then they tell you why. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered. Notice in italics, precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. That's why we study it at the three meetings, Experience the Big Book. Because I believe that if we know the information here, then we'll do the information in here, and if we do it, then we'll have a power to live. It says, for them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. What they're telling me there is that if you read this book, the information is so convincing that you won't question it. This is a testimony. This is a testament. This is their experience, their testimony of what they did. And they think they put it together in a way that it will gain your attention and gain your confidence. They fully expected, although I don't know how much it happened, that people would get the book. They'd mail it to them in 1939. And then they would read the book and do the steps themselves. And then they would take the book to someone else and they would work the steps with them. And they were very disappointed when not many people bought it. in 1939, but we're going to read in the forward the second edition how it became accepted and how things got going. And so I made the point last week, I think the big book is very hard to read alone. I think it's very hard to see how it's laid out, and that's why it's considered a textbook. Textbooks need to be taught, and someone who understands the textbook, has done the information, teaches someone else, and then they teach someone else. And so let's turn to the forward to the second edition. This was in 1955. It says, since the original forward to this book was written in 1939, a wholesale miracle has taken place. Now, they're looking at it in 1955. They couldn't imagine what it would be like today in 2018. And remember, we read A Vision for You, and they talk about how they envisioned AA, you know, twos and threes going out with this book around the country, small groups starting, helping one another. Sort of like, you know, the things happened at Pentecost, and then look how many churches there are today. You know, when you think about similar, I'm not saying it's the same thing, but it's a similar spread of a spiritual message. Our earliest printing voiced the hope that every alcoholic who journeys will find the fellowship of AA at its destination. And so this was their hope. And I talked about the fellowship of AA in the beginning was they called it a fellowship of the Spirit. These were people who were doing the deal. They were seeking a relationship with God, and they were in a community of fellow, what you might call fellow believers, fellow people who wanted this relationship with their higher power. The ones who didn't want it, they never made the meetings. And so it kind of selected out the people who didn't do it. But in the beginning, that was the fellowship. It was very powerful. And it says, already continues the early text, twos and threes and fives of us have sprung up in other communities. 16 years have elapsed between our first printing and the presentation, 1955, of our second edition. In that brief space, Alcoholics Anonymous has mushroomed the 6,000 groups with 150,000 recovered alcoholics. I have no idea how many groups there are today. I think there's several million people who consider themselves recovered in the whole world. I think it's in 160 languages, maybe 170 languages. Groups that we found in the United States and all the provinces, and they talk about where they were. And they were making promising beginnings, some in Asia. And then at the bottom it says, the spark that was to flare into the first A group was struck in Akron, Ohio in June 1935 during a talk between a New York stockbroker and an Akron physician. And we'll get to Bill's story, we'll read it, but Bill W., in 1934, he was dying, and there was no hope for him. And he, in November 1934, he was sitting in his kitchen, and somebody came to see him and told him that they had a religious idea and a program of action that might be able to save his life. And Bill said he had enough booze to outlast him. He could outlast the guy, but he had never seen this man, Ebbie Thatcher, sober. They were friends in childhood. And Ebbie talked to him, and Bill argued about God. You know how we are. He's dying. He can't stop drinking. And he's arguing about whether he could believe in God. And then it finally dawned on him that all he had to do was choose his own conception of God. And then that changed, and he said the icy mountain that he had lived in the darkness from melted away because he became open and willing to seek a higher power. And then he went into the hospital, and Ebbie Thatcher had gone to the Oxford group, and they had six steps. We're going to read about that. And they worked the six steps, and then Bill left the hospital, and he decided that he wanted to give away what he had to the world. And he, unfortunately, he couldn't find anybody that he could sober up. He worked for 6 months. And then he goes to this business meeting, and we're going to read about it. And then he eventually meets Dr. Bob in May of 1935, and in June 1935 is when we say is our first day when AA's birthday. And so the spark that was the flare was a variety of things. It was Roland Heiser going to Switzerland, Roland Heiser going back to New York, going to the Calvary Church, meeting Reverend Shoemaker, rescuing Ebbie Thatcher from the judge, Ebbie Thatcher going to Bill W. going in the hospital. Bill W. going to Dr. Bob. I call it the hand of God. It says 6 months earlier, the broker who we call Bill W. had been relieved of his drink obsession by a sudden spiritual experience following a meeting with the alcoholic friend who was Ebbie Thatcher, who had been in contact with the Oxford groups of that day. Now, Ebbie Thatcher was only sober 60 days. The Oxford group was not a treatment for alcoholism. It was a group of Christian men trying to live by Christian spiritual principles that were in the Gospels before in the first century after Jesus died. They were trying to live these Christian principles. They tried to practice absolute purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love. They had six steps, and Ebbie was sober 60 days. They said, you need to go to somebody and witness. So you hear a lot of things at 60 days. You know, you can't even chair a lot of meetings in Topeka if you don't have 6 months. But he had 60 days, and he knew Bill W. And he knew Bill W. would be drinking. He knew Bill, and he went to Bill, and then we're here today. So think about that. It says he had also been greatly helped by the late Dr. William Silkworth, a New York specialist in alcoholism, who is now counted no less than a medical saint by AA members, and whose story of the early days of our society appears in the next pages. Now, Dr. Silkworth wrote Doctor's Opinion. He's not an alcoholic, but he told Bill W. what his problem was. He worked with alcoholics in the Towns Hospital in New York, and he understood that there was something wrong with us, that if we had a drink, we would want more than one, and we couldn't stop. And nobody understood that. They thought we were just really sick people. Well, we probably are, but in a lot of ways. But we have this inability to drink just one. In fact, we were joking, we were meeting back there. I said, well, we should have like a free one night a month AA drinking night at the meeting and bring in some beer and then see what the parking lot's like and see how the whole evening it would be. We should film it. We could probably sell it to one of those TV stations. Anyway, Mark says it's a bad idea, so we're not going to do it. But he described the allergy of the body, which he calls craving. And a lot of people think craving is before you drink. It's after you drink. Your body craves alcohol. It's another thing people don't understand. There's something wrong with our bodies. It's not a mental thing. It's a body. I cannot just drink one. I still remember I was 13. It was Passover Seder, and they had this Manischewitz wine, which is this sweet godforsaken stuff. But, you know, it was really good. And then I'd go downstairs, and they'd all be in the thing, and I'd go upstairs and take a little bit more. You know, it was good stuff. And I had the craving from the first time I ever had alcohol in my body. Anybody else have that? And so he understood that. He explained that to Bill. Bill didn't understand that. And so Bill then understood why, when he drank, he could never stop. He'd be going for a business deal that he had to have. He'd stop for a drink, and he'd never get to the meeting. And then he told Bill something else that Bill didn't understand, that when he's sober, his mind seeks alcohol because we don't like the way we feel. He understood that alcoholics have something wrong with us. He called it the spiritual malady. We understand that now. Living without God, sober, we get irritable, restless, and discontent. And that was a nice way of saying we get pissed off. And we're full of fear. Anybody relate to that? Because, and we don't even realize why. I didn't know why. But I'm playing God. And I tried to run the world. Anybody else try to do that? And it didn't go well. And it just kept, it was so frustrating if they would just understand, right? And so anybody else have that? So we didn't feel good, and we knew alcohol would fix that. Why? Because when we started drinking, it made us feel good. And it changed the way we see the world. So he understood that alcohol changes the way we see things. We have a disease of perception. We don't like the way we see the world, and we take something to treat that. And we call that alcohol, and we name the disease after the treatment. Alcohol wasn't our problem. It was a treatment for living sober, where we just couldn't make it in the world. And our mind was damaged. I don't know about you, but my mind was damaged. So my mind, even though I didn't want to drink, I knew it was bad, when I wasn't feeling good, my mind would say, you need a drink. Now, when my mind said that, the other part of my mind couldn't overcome that. And then I actually started to feel better when I decided that I was going to drink. Anybody ever do that? You understand the ease and comfort of alcohol. And so when we get that, nothing could come between us. So we would wake up in the morning and not want to drink. He explained that to Bill. But then your mind seeks the ease and comfort of alcohol, and you end up drinking. And he understood that. Now, he didn't have a solution for that. He's a doctor. He could not fix that. He had no way of treating that. It was very frustrating. He'd see hopeless case after hopeless case. And so Bill learned that, and then you remember he was sitting in the hospital, and they said that he was going to be locked up or go insane, and then Ebbie Thatcher came to him and gave him a spiritual program, and then they put their spiritual program, the 12 steps, in this book. And so it says, from this doctor, the broker had learned the grave nature of alcoholism. Grave is bad, by the way. It's a bad situation. We were talking the other day about telling people they're going to die or this or that. The Big Book says that many times. It says this is going to threaten your life. It's going to kill you. It's fatal. They use those words because it really is. And it said, although he could not accept all the tenets of the Oxford groups, he was convinced of the need for moral inventory, which is, they turned that into our steps 4 and 5, confession of personality defects, which is our steps 6 and 7, restitutions of those harmed, 8 and 9, helpfulness to others, step 12, and the necessity of belief in and dependence upon God, which is how we live 10 and 11. Now, they didn't really talk about steps 1 and 2 because they lived step 1, and that was their experience. And then they came to believe that there was a power that could help them because of their witness from other people. And so prior to his journey to Akron, the broker had worked hard with many alcoholics. This is from December 1934 to May of 1935, on the theory that only an alcoholic could help an alcoholic, but he had succeeded only in keeping sober himself. Now, he did get some advice from Dr. Silkworth, because Bill wanted to talk about this great spiritual change that he had felt. But he said, no, talk about how it was, how your drinking was, how you reached complete defeat, your allergy of the body, your obsession of the mind, and then talk about what you did to be able to recover from that. And he did realize that his wife told him that, you know, he complained that people died in their house, couldn't get anybody to work the steps, but his wife said, you're sober. So it's kept you sober. And he went to the hospital, and he wasn't working. And that's what he said, if you read his story, he says he had a lot of fear and things were not great. But whenever he felt bad, he just went and tried to find an alcoholic. He went to the hospital and talked to people. So then he'd gone to Akron on a business venture which had collapsed. He was going to be a big shot again. He's going to put together this company and run a business. And he was all excited on his way because he could see how this was going to fix all of his problems. So you can see where Bill's getting a little bit away from dependence on God, and his ego is starting to grow, and he's going to be a big shot and be a success and on his way, right? And like some people have said, if that had happened, we may not have been here today. But it didn't work out. The business deal fell through. He was in the lobby of the Mayfair Hotel, and he couldn't pay the bill, and he didn't know what he was going to do, and he felt pretty discouraged. So he got this brilliant idea. See if this makes sense. I'm going to go into the bar because there's a lot of gaiety there, and I'll listen. I'm just going to listen. Then his mind immediately goes, I could just take one drink, maybe two. And then he says, and we'll read it, fear gripped him. He understood from his first step that he was in big trouble. And he was standing right there, and then God, he shivered. And I think God kind of came and said, Bill, bad idea. And then he said to himself, I need to go find another alcoholic to turn to. And he turned away from the bar, and God made his move, and we're here today. I don't know if it's the same, but Joe and Charlie talk about, you know, Paul on the Damascus Road was headed there to kill all the Christians, and then he got zapped on the donkey. And God said to him, you're going to change. You're going to do something different. And something happened to Bill W., because he was not a very, he was a very self-centered man. You'll read his story. And then immediately thought of how he could help people. Something changed. He couldn't stop giving this away. And so in great fear he might drink again. Then he suddenly realized that in order to save himself, he must carry his message to another alcoholic. So if we want to save ourselves, we have to give it away. That alcoholic turned out to be the Akron physician. This physician, this was Dr. Bob. Now, Dr. Bob had repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcoholic dilemma, but had failed. He was a rear-end doctor. So Bill was a, I don't know what you would call him, he's a Wall Street stockbroker, speculator, kind of a shyster type. That's how they describe him. And Dr. Bob was a really nice, very religious man who operated on people's rear ends. So God picked a strange combination to come together. And we'll talk about the guy who gave his rear end for AA in a minute. And then, Dr. Bob had tried to get sober with the Oxford group, but he couldn't. He read the Bible. I've been in his house. They have the Bible up there over the fire. It's a small house, but in those days, it was a lot of people didn't have homes. It was right in the Depression, 1935. And the Bible's up there. He would read the Bible and then drink all night. And he couldn't stay sober. He went to the Oxford groups. And he couldn't see himself as he thought there was something wrong with him, and he was a sinful man who didn't deserve anything. He was a bad person. He was weak-willed. He was an immoral human being. And when you feel that way, it's very hard for an alcoholic feel that way to keep from not drinking. And so in May, on that May 14th, Bill went to the lobby and found names of people to call, tried to find an alcoholic. And he called the church directory and he found Reverend Thunk. And so Reverend Thunk is how we're here today. And Reverend Thunk knew a lady named Henrietta Cyberling. And Henrietta Cyberling was one of the heirs to the Firestone Tire Company. And she had gone to the Oxford group with Dr. Bob and was good friends with his wife, Lois Smith. And Dr. Bob had admitted to the group 3 weeks ago that he was an alcoholic. Of course, they all knew it. But he admitted, and he couldn't stop drinking. And Henrietta said she prayed that God would send someone to Dr. Bob. And so she told Bill she knew somebody, and but so she called Dr. Bob's house, and unfortunately, he was passed out drunk in the foyer of the lobby of their house with a potted plant. So they say he was potted and he bought a potted plant. And his wife says he's not available today, but what about tomorrow? So she asked Bill if he could stay sober, and apparently he had dinner with her, and he said, I can stay sober tonight. And then Dr. Bob the next day, when he recovered from his drinking bout, he says, you know, he's dying of alcoholism, right? He has no hope. And they told him they had somebody here who wanted to help him. So you know what he said? I'll give him 15 minutes. You get it? You see how we are? You've heard that. We've probably said it ourselves. I'll give him 15 minutes, you know, I'm so busy. And they talked for 4 hours. And nobody knows exactly what was said, but what they both say is that Dr. Bob understood the powerlessness of his disease. He understood that he wasn't a bad person. He had no power. He had no power to keep from drinking. That he wasn't committing horrible. He knew he was a sinner and he knew he was doing wrong, but he had no power to stop it. And he understood that he needed a relationship with God from the point of humility of his powerlessness. And he was able to forgive himself. And so they worked together, and then Dr. Bob went to the AA convention, and his wife said, don't let him go. He gets drunk every time. So Bill said, well, we can't lock him up, so we'll let him go. But of course, he got drunk, and he came back, but he wouldn't go home. He went to his nurse's house. He was kind of afraid. And then they finally got a hold of him and kind of detoxed him. And he had a big surgery to do. Now, some people tried to find out the name of the poor guy whose rear end they operated on, but you know, people are interested in that stuff. But so Bill gave him a beer. He actually gave him a beer that night and a beer in the morning right before he went in because he was shaking so bad. And then Dr. Bob did the surgery and called him and told him it went great. And they were all relieved, and then he didn't come home. So they said, oh my, you know, he's got alcohol, he's going to drink. And they were really worried. And what Dr. Bob did, he went around and he told everybody he was an alcoholic and he made amends. He went around to people And then he came home that night and he never drank again. So that was June 10th, 1935. Think about it. And we're here today. I'm going to stop there. And next week we'll pick up. I want to give us time to congratulate Karen. I hope this was helpful. Every time I do the history, it gets me emotional because we're alive today because of these events and these people. And then we'll pick up with that. I found something really good that I'm going to get Xerox. We're going to read. It's the 1940 AA preamble. And it's really powerful. Maybe we should read that at all of our meetings. And it's really, really well done. And we'll do that. Karen's meant a lot to me. She's great. I love to hear her talk about her mental thinking and her disease and the humility she has, and she's helped me a lot. So, and I'm thinking Karen's sober 39 years, and the second edition was written after, what, 16 years. And I know for a lot of the young people here, it gives us a lot of hope. It's like Bill's story in the room right there. So anyway, I'm going to open it up and thank you.